The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojen Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojen Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbot of the Zen Center in New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, everyone. Fusatsu is a renewal of vows ceremony, the renewal of our own vows, and doing that together as a community. Together, we atone for the kinds of harmful karma or separation we have created, and we recommit to practicing good and actualizing that good for others. To live a life in harmony, which is our nature. We are harmony. And it's important to renew our vows. Vows set our direction. And we know that there's all kinds of vows. So what direction are we going in? What are we vowing to? That's very important. And it's important to renew. So here we are vowing in a direction to be an aspiring bodhisattva, to rededicate ourselves to the practice of the bodhisattva's way, to be of benefit to all beings. And this ceremony goes back to the time of the Buddha, usually on the night of a full moon when the community would gather together and confess, I'll use that word, speak about, tell each other how they've transgressed the precepts, broken the precepts. Others help us to see our blind spots. And as a community, it helps build a sacred trust together to hear from each other, to be guided in our practice. The word fusatsu is translated as continuous good practice, or to cease from unwholesome actions, where we can make fresh and strong again the direction that we choose to go in. As Bodhidharma said, bring the body of insight together with the mind of insight. And tonight I wanted to look at the three pure precepts, particularly do not make harm, which is a centerpiece of Buddha's teaching of Buddhism. Don't make harm. Don't make harm. Practice good. Actualize good for others. And where do we see this in Zazen? So we made offerings to the Buddha and ancestors. We got down onto our knees and placed our hands palm to palm together. If you really do that gassho, it's, you know, one hand. You know, it's not a chin rest. It's not a nose rest. It's an upright unification embodiment, right? Right from the start. I am at one with it all, this gatha of atonement. All evil karma ever created by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. Simply, the word karma means action, and it's derived from a verbal root, kur, which is to make or to do. So it's the relationship between what we choose to do and then what we make of ourselves, how we shape ourselves, and how we are shaped by ourselves through action, each moment by intention, born of our body, mouth, and thought. That's how we create karma. We inherit karma from past imprints in our genetic lineage, our ancestors, this current bundle of formations, and the past shapes how we understand and construct present intentions, and then moves into future karma, which may be more or less skillful or unskillful, wholesome or unwholesome. And then that flows into what we inherit further downstream in the flow of consciousness. But it's a very open system. And karma can be extinguished, as the Buddha said. Until that time, if we can increase the amount of mindfulness, we can then expand our range of possible responses. This is the essence of freedom, and by freedom here, being able to choose how we respond to things in this heavily conditioned system. So, as mentioned, this principle of cause and effect is the centerpiece of Buddhist teaching of Buddhism. And when he developed his teaching on karma, it wasn't by speculating about it. It was him carefully and closely observing how things exactly worked in his life. Remember, he had that famous way of saying, I wouldn't ask you to do it if I didn't do it. And this continues to be true today, that the deepest insights into karma come from each of us studying, inspecting with focus and clarity how things work for us, how things work for you, from your actions, to really study that. When the Bodhisattva precepts and specific practices were laid out to contemplate and consider so that we could have a peaceful, harmonious life, numero uno was don't make harm. Practice good, actualize good for others. These three pure precepts. And this principle of karma has two parts. There's the karma of cause and the karma of effect. The karma of cause is a way of acting and the acts that create unresolved karma, unfinished business. So, the feeling that we're left with, like not doing something so kosher, where it kind of leaves a hangover. You ever have that? You did some kind of action and there's a hangover. A haunt that stays with us until it's resolved. And we're like a weather system in that sense. It will produce increasing cloudiness of similarly unresolved situations that haunts this particular relationship and others. So, you know, you could feel that, like you did something, like maybe you lied to someone, or you know, I remember recently I was
I did something because I was jealous of someone, and immediately I just felt this hangover, this haunt, like I did something, I manipulated something because of a feeling I had. And I could just, and I had to confess it right away to someone. I was like, I did this, you know, because it was just, it just came right in. And I was just like, I felt like when I saw them, I knew it was going to be affected. I affected the person I said it to, and there it went. It was already going, that haunt. So we have to deal with it. According to the teachings, we have since beginningless beginning a mass of unresolved karma. Isn't that enlightening? Also, unfinished business remains in our body. Right? So we may recognize and experience this as tension. So something happened and we're carrying some kind of tension. So in some ways, we only accept a small part of the total experience into our consciousness, and then we block a lot out. And that remains trapped in our body. And it takes the form of unacknowledged feelings, emotions, memories, sensations. And we may hold this at bay and get really tense and find ourselves resisting our body's experience. And then we just increase the log jam of this incomplete experience. So how do we not make harm to ourselves, practice good, and find the wisdom of tension? So first, it's really important to slow down, drop the thinking mind for a while. Drop the thinking mind for a while. Don't you worry, it will come back. Become more conscious of your body experience through your physical sensations. Don't personally identify with the emotions, the feelings. We're told all, again and again, they're not us. And then connect with your grounded body, open, an open heart, a clear mind. Shugan was reminding me of Sokni Rinpoche's teaching on meeting our beautiful monsters. Bankai called it our pulses in the pattern, meeting our pulses in the pattern. And to meet that in that holding space of what he calls love, love essence, deep inside of us, drop down the thinking mind, hold those, just the sensations in that holding tank of our love. With the karma of effect, we contemplate the entire bank of unresolved karma that accompanies us in each moment, recognizing that all of this is actually the result of previous actions. So it's the whole entire bank. As Buddha put it, beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, are bound to their actions, have their actions as their refuge. It is action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. And fortunately, karma is just as strong in positive, wholesome directions. So happiness generates further happiness for self and for others. Care generates further care, that kind of karma. Actions of kindness create greater conditions to develop goodness.
In an essay by Dogen on not creating harm, he said, "If we don't do harm or make harm, it doesn't exist on its own." We don't do harm or make harm, it doesn't exist on its own. It takes someone or something to create it. A Sangha, who was the Indian Mahayana teacher, founder of the mind-only Yogacara school, wrote out the three pure precepts in a different way, which I liked. Embracing and sustaining standards of conduct, which is do not create evil. Embracing and sustaining good qualities, practicing good, and embracing and sustaining living beings, actualizing good for others. So to appreciate, again, that embracing quality. And the precepts were referred to as standards for monastic bodhisattvas, but it was a Sangha who made it clear that a lay bodhisattva path is an essential element of the Mahayana. And this got passed on to the Zen tradition. Lay and monastic bodhisattvas embraced. It's not so much what form one's life takes, rather, are we embracing and sustaining the standards of the precepts in our particular life's role? As in, are we letting go of our self-centeredness, which often brings harm to others? Yeah. And this is, of course, we might have heard this in the Buddhist teaching, refraining from all harm. In the Dhammapada, Buddha said, summing up the whole path of practice, refrain from all harm, do all good, purify the mind. That is the teaching of the Buddhas. Mind precedes all mental states. Mind is their chief. They are all mind wrought. Dogen transmitted this precept of embrace and sustain standards of conduct, and he wrote in an essay called Refrain from All Harm, in which he tells the story of a Chinese teacher named Bird's Nest, who was called this because he lived up in a tree. And the story goes, there's a statesman and a poet who was a student of Bird's Nest. And one time the statesman stood below his tree and called up to him and said, "Looks very precarious and dangerous up there." And Bird's Nest yelled down, "Looks very precarious and dangerous down there." Indeed, it's very precarious and dangerous to actually go about the world outside of trees, because it's so easy to get caught in get into causing harm and forget about doing good. Once a statesman said, "What's the great meaning of Buddhist teaching?" We hear that a lot, of course, and people are always asking that question in ancient China. And his teacher replied, "Refrain from harm, do all good." The statesman said, "Though this is so, even a 3-year-old child can say that." And the teacher said, "A 3-year-old child may be able to say it, but an 80-year-old person cannot practice it." And the statesman bowed, "Thank you," and left. Dogen commented on this story. It was translated like this: "Since the family of Buddhas arises from conditions, thus conditions arise from the family of Buddhas. It is not that harm does not exist. It's just that it is not done." And this writing is titled Shoaku Makusa, which the radicals mean do not do all harm. But it could also read as all harm is not done. Harm is not empty. It is not done. Harm is not form. It is not done.
harm is not done. It's just not done. You follow, Dogen? So seeing it's not substantial and not denying what is here, what is arising. Dogen's words on the precept, ceasing from evil is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This abiding place is the state of non-duality, of not knowing and non-separation. The sixth ancestor, which we're reading in the monastics meetings, defines Zazen as the state of mind in which there is no separation between subject and object, no space between you and me, up and down, right or wrong. So, can we be open to all of those ways in our life without knowing, without having an answer? Can we, really? Dogen says, doing good. This is the Dharma of supreme enlightenment. This is the way of all beings. Being one with the Buddha, raise the Bodhi mind. Let that supreme way be realized. The flowering of Zazen is doing good for others. Dogen says, this is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. So if we have a notion we're being holy, what's the point? Where does that get us? The point is to serve, to be the offering and see. So, apropos to apple blossom sesshin, Buddha is related to the English word bud, Buddha, we can call him. A flower's awakening or opening. So we don't have to really worry about what to do. If we cease from evil, become the state of unknowing, become Zazen, the offering will arise. The fruit will be born. The bud of the flower will awaken. Being one with the Dharma, let wisdom be like the ocean. We're living in a Buddha field, a Buddha field, blossoming, fruitful practice field where we can practice all of it. How do we lead ourselves? That's a question. To lead ourselves, lead people, let harmony pervade everywhere.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.